Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa, with the capacity to process over 65,000 transaction messages every second. Visa's been bringing innovations to the way we pay for over 60 years. Imagine a world where, instead of just tapping to pay with your Visa, you had to wait for everyone in front of you to cut a check everywhere you went. Imagine how much fun it'd be trying to track down your cousin in Milwaukee for league dues. That's why Visa's vision is to be the best way to pay and be paid everywhere, so you won't have to. Whatever your goals are, Visa makes paying fast and easy. The only thing left to figure out is, where would you like to be? Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in Baltimore. All right, if you tuned in expecting to see me gloat about the Ravens romp, Baltimore's 37-20 victory over the previously unbeaten New England Patriots, you don't know me very well. I am way too modest to brag, way too classy. It would be beneath my dignity to open this show pointing out that all last week I told anyone who would listen the Ravens would romp and the 3.5-point spread was a chance to pay for Christmas. Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are going to put it on the Patriots this Sunday night. Nobody's willing to step out on this limb with me. Listen, you can run on this Patriots team. The undefeated streak for the Patriots ends on Sunday.
I wish this was confidence, man, but...
It is!
It's just calling your bookie. It's already in, huh?
My money's already in. I'm on the money line. But I am a little concerned about overconfidence here. So far this year, Lamar's passing numbers are nearly as good as Tom Brady's. I feel very good about this. I expect Lamar Jackson to outplay the GOAT this weekend. All right, big homie, don't roll like that. I'm much too secure and confident to throw my success in the face of my doubters. I'm not the type to say I told you so or try to convince you that there are a few people outside of Bill Belichick and Sean Payton who know more about the game of football than yours truly. What's known doesn't need explanation. This show isn't about looking in the rearview mirror. It's about analyzing the road ahead. My next statement will be more shocking than anything I said last week about the Patriots and the Ravens. Drumroll, please. I was more impressed by the Patriots last night than the Ravens. If there's a postseason rematch, the Patriots will win. The Patriots climbed out of a 17-0 hole and early in the third quarter were driving toward a go-ahead touchdown when Julian Edelman fumbled the football. Ravens defensive back Marlon Humphrey scooped up the ball, raced 70 yards for a score, and gave Baltimore back its double-digit advantage. If Edelman doesn't fumble there, Tom Brady and the Patriots win the game. You can argue the Ravens gifted the Patriots a path back into the game with 2 second-quarter fumbles. That's accurate. But my belief is Belichick and his defense figured out how to slow Lamar Jackson and Baltimore's plus-one offense after the first quarter. After taking the 17-0 lead, Lamar ran for just 24 yards on 11 carries. It took one quarter for Belichick to remove the plus from the plus one offense. Now that he has the plus one offense on tape versus his personnel, I'd expect Belichick's defense to do even better in a rematch. Just as important, I believe Brady and wide receiver Mohamed Sanu found a rhythm and comfort that will serve the Patriots well the rest of the season. Sanu caught 10 passes and a touchdown last night. No doubt the 8-0 Patriots were overvalued, their previously unblemished record a byproduct of a soft schedule, but Belichick coach teams are known for their season-long improvement. The Patriots haven't peaked. My suspicion is the Ravens romp will be the highlight of Baltimore's season. Playing at home and with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis on the sideline cheering, Baltimore's performance was rather predictable. I deserve no credit for calling this game accurately. If you insist on giving me credit, you need to know I also bet on the Browns, Colts, and the Lions on Sunday. My Christmas was canceled well before the Patriots and the Ravens kicked off. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Eric Mangini and Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Yeah. Am I crazy for being more impressed with the Patriots last night than the Ravens?
I don't think you're crazy. I had the same thoughts after that game, knowing Belichick and his mystique and his ability and their ability to self-correct. We saw it within that game from the first quarter. And the remaining three quarters, you started to look and say, okay, the Ravens still have the lead. Okay, the Ravens still dictating tempo, but things have changed in terms of the numbers, as you mentioned. What was it, 11 more carries for 24 yards in the remaining three quarters? Playing against Belichick, you also know that if you get him once, the chances are you're not going to get him again. He will self-correct. That said, what lends itself to your argument even greater is this same Baltimore Ravens team. Understand that they've made some changes, some fixes, a Mark Ingram, et cetera, in the offseason. Draft choices have helped this team. But remember last year when they went out to L.A., came out here and played the Chargers, latter part of the season, and they beat the Chargers 22-10. And people are like, oh. And then in a couple weeks, playoffs started, they had to see the same exact team. And they lost to that team, 23-17. The Chargers didn't know what was coming in that first game against the Baltimore Ravens. It's a different offense. They, in philosophy, are all in on their running game. We saw counter power with the quarterback yesterday. So they're a different mold, different breed. So when you get to see that, you have to deal with the first wave. And we saw the Patriots handle it. And in the second go-around, because they'll see each other again in postseason, I think it will be a different outcome.
Yeah, this was not impressive by New England, and they have seen this offense before. Now, the good news is they gave up 37 this time. The last time they faced Greg Roman in an offense like this was in 2012 against the 49ers with Colin Kaepernick, and they gave up 41 in that game. So they have faced this. They have faced this coordinator. They didn't do very well the last time. They didn't do very well this time. But even more so, to jump off sides on fourth down, that's not the way the Patriots operate. To be out physical early in the game and to not match the intensity that the Ravens had early in the game, that's not characteristic of the Patriots. To have Julian Edelman fumble the ball and then have it picked up and scored for a touchdown, that's not characteristic. To have Tom Brady's interception where there's nobody really even close to where that ball's thrown, that's not characteristic of the way that the Patriots do things. I was disappointed with the way they played. I thought they'd play more zone. I thought they would take away the run a lot more effectively and force Lamar Jackson to be a passer. They didn't do those things. And overall, I agree with Bill in the postgame press conference. It was not very good in any aspect of that game.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that I was way more impressed with New England. And I think if you look back in history and you see what the New England Patriots have done for the last 20 years, you know they're going to improve. You know that this is just a little glitch. Mm-hmm. It happens every year to them. It seems like they always get blown out at least once during the season. Yeah. And it's one of those things, they turn it right back around and they say, okay, we're going to address this. That's why they're so good. That's why they always get to the Super Bowl, is because they make corrections as they keep going. That's how you do life. That's how you do business. That's how you do football. And it seems so simple, but they have mastered that. So looking at them last night with Mohamed Sanu, I'm excited about that. I think if Mohamed Sanu had played with New England and Tom Brady his whole career, he would be up there with one of the greats of all time. Because what I saw last night, that added component with Julian Edelman going down there, with Sony Michel and James, all those guys, it is going to be spectacular. They're going to get it right. And I'm still saying New England Patriots in the AFC Championship game against my Kansas City Chiefs.
I got to admit, everybody's reaction has caught me off guard. And so I want to reflip the question or retry a different question just so there's more clarity. Marcel, were you impressed by Baltimore last night?
Absolutely. Impressed by Baltimore. But the correction, the fix for the New England Patriots is a little easier than it may seem. I'll tell you this. When I've been on a defense before, number one ranked. I know I've been on some lowly defenses where we had pass defense issues, rush defense issues. It's easier to fix the run defense because of gap discipline, toughness, and you can hammer that home in practice. 9-on-7. We're going to send our sluggers against our hammers. Let's go. When it's a pass defense issue, it's a little more talent-based. They're on those islands, and more so, we can't go 100% against the receivers and the running backs out the backfield. We just can't. We got to protect those properties. So to fix a pass defense in practice is a difficult task compared to a run defense. I can see Belichick saying, look, guys, this is how you want to come out the tunnel. This is how you want to start a game. We're going to fix this immediately. And that may be a quicker fix than in the back
end. Impressed by Baltimore.
Look, I was impressed by Baltimore to some degree. I think if this is how you want to play football and you want to take your quarterback and turn him into a running back who also happens to pass every now and then that's great. You can't sustain it. There's a lot of good young running quarterbacks. There aren't very many good old ones. And when you consistently expose a player like that to hit after hit, it's the law of averages in the NFL, and it's going to catch up to you. And the same thing happened with Colin. The other aspect of this is as these guys get paid, they don't want to run like that. It's a totally different equation. They get that the big contract. They stop being the run-first quarterback that you want to be, and they have to be the pocket passer. If Baltimore can play football like this and control games, they're in good shape. If he has to come out and win the game throwing the ball, they're not in good shape. They're not built to do that. So, yeah, from this formula perspective, it was good. Is it sustainable? I don't think it's sustainable, and I think you have a real problem if you've got to come out and try to win the game throwing the ball.
Phenomenal answer. Can you top that? Were you impressed by Baltimore last night?
Earl Thomas, I was impressed. The running game was impressed. Lamar, he's been doing this, so I'm not surprised.
Right.
I mean, you knew that he was going to have success, and just like you said there, Coach, that the running quarterbacks have had success against Belichick before. This isn't the first one to do it because you can't prepare for that. It's one of those things you can't duplicate in practice. So am I impressed by that? Yeah, they're a good football team. But are they better than New England Patriots? No. I don't think they're going to beat the New England Patriots next time they play against each other.
This is going in so many different directions that I wasn't expecting. I was impressed because they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They have a unique running game, and they shoved it down New England's throat. Hats off to them. I'm sure Bill Belichick and his coaching staff were embarrassed. I tend to agree with you all, though. I think the fixes are on the other side, which leads me to the final question in this segment. Mm. Who is the best team in the AFC? It sounds like y'all still on the Patriots.
No, I'm going to say right now in this moment, it's the Ravens. You just beat the Patriots, so I can't say the Patriots right now. But as soon as Patrick Mahomes takes one snap under center, it's the Chiefs. But then the end game is going to be the Patriots. And it's almost cyclical like that for the Patriots in many of their successful years where you kind of discount them or you count them out, and then they just show up at the end because of all those self-corrections. So I got it present and in the short term, and then at the end game. The end game is going to be the Patriots again.
New England's the best team because they do have the ability to self-correct. They do have the ability to minimize their weaknesses and then attack someone else's weaknesses. But the problems they have are real. These O-line problems are not going away. And Dante Scarnecchia deserves a ton of credit for doing what he's done already. But you see the volume of pressure that Tom Brady's under consistently, whereas he's had to get the ball away. And when I'm talking about max pressure, I'm talking about four-man rushes. That's an issue. They don't have an answer at tight end. And defensively, the Browns could have easily won that game against them. The Ravens beat them, and they're going into a bunch of teams now that are a lot different than the first eight teams they face, which was very little challenge to what they do. Do I think they're the best team? Yeah, because I think they're the best coach team, and I think they're the most cohesive team, and they understand how to win and are resilient. Are they the most talented team? No.
You know, Coach Belichick is he's a Zen master. He's like Phil Jackson to me. He's never too high, never too low. And I don't know if you guys seen Bruce Lee's talk about water. Like, you must be like water, my friend. Mm-hmm. And that is what this team is. They always, always seem to conform about whatever they have, and that's why they can have continued success. But having said that, I still think the Chiefs. Yeah. I don't think the Chiefs are going to lose another football game this year. During the regular season, when they get to the playoffs and they have to go to, depending on what happens, I hope they can get the Patriots at home in Arrowhead because that's where I think they can really beat them. But looking at them, Eric Fisher's coming back, left tackle. You got Patrick Mahomes coming back. They just played against the Minnesota Vikings, which people were saying they were the best team in the NFL, the most talented roster, and maybe they are, but the Chiefs beat them with the backup quarterback. Tyreek Hill's going to get going. Him and Patrick Mahomes haven't been on the same page. They haven't been out there together, full strength. And Chris Jones on defense. Did you watch that game yesterday? Chris Jones was getting pressure consistently, had a sack, three tackles to go along with Frank Clark once because he hasn't gotten going yet. I just think that defense with the Honey Badger, I'm still hyped on the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think they lose another game this year.
I like y'all's argument for the Chiefs. Probably lean that direction. I'm a Houston Texans guy. I think that Deshaun Watson's the best player in the AFC this year. I watched them this past weekend. They certainly missed J.J. Watt. Their defense has taken a little bit of a step back without J.J. Watt. But they're figuring out a way, and I think they will figure out a way to make enough defensive stop. I just think Deshaun Watson's playing at a special level other than Russell Wilson over in the NFC. I think he's the MVP of the league. I still like the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson. I do think, though, I just still have questions about the Chiefs' defense. I don't think the Ravens or the Patriots are the best team in the AFC. I do think it's between the Chiefs and the Houston Texans. I'm just leaning a little bit more on the Texans. One, I don't want to jinx the Chiefs. And two, I'm still not 1,000% sold on the Chiefs' defense.
Can't argue that. I mean, the three losses, Saints, Panthers, Colts, all good teams. So the Texans haven't laid an egg against good teams. It's just they played a tougher schedule than what we're talking about here. But I just don't see the Texans. Texans last year, remember, first game in the playoffs, lost at home. Indianapolis Coast 21-7. He's special.
Jason Whitlock here to tell you about our sponsor, SimpliSafe. According to the FBI, the average loss in burglary is over $2,000. It can be hard to recover from that. There are over 2 million burglaries reported every year. That's one every 13 seconds. SimpliSafe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. It's easy to order. Everything is usually set up in under an hour. Prices are always fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring is just $15 a month. Visit simplysafe.com/speak. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure to go to simplysafe.com/speak so they know our show sent you. That's SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/speak.
Whitlock and Wiley, Tony Gonzalez is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst and the father of Lamar Jackson, Michael Vick. All right, time now for a big story presented by Hyundai. All right, let's move to Pittsburgh, where Mike Tomlin's Steelers hung on to beat the Colts yesterday, moving them to 4-4 on the year and back in the playoff hunt despite a rash of injuries that could have derailed their season. But they're not the only team surprising people, with John Gruden's Raiders beating Detroit to move to 4-4, and themselves with another excellent game from Derek Carr and running back Josh Jacobs. All right, the question here is, more impressive 4-4 coach, Mike Tomlin or John Gruden?
Mike Tomlin, not close. Lost his franchise quarterback, the quarterback he's had his entire tenure as the Pittsburgh Steelers coach, which he's never had a losing record, and the third most wins as an active head coach. And Mike Tomlin, after week two, decides, okay, we're going to have to change the game plan. We're going to have to mix this up. Also, he has a bad, porous running game. James Conner's injured. All those things are occurring, and they're still out there staying alive in the AFC fight for a playoff seed. So Mike Tomlin is doing amazing things, especially when you talk about all the issues they've had and losing to Le'Veon Bell last year and losing to Antonio Brown for this year and all the discipline issues that they've had, supposedly. Whatever you want to say about Mike Tomlin, you can't say that he's a loser. You can't even say that in the season where he's lost Ben Roethlisberger and his starting running back that he's a loser. So I have to say Mike Tomlin.
I have to say Mike Tomlin as well, because I've been in a locker room with Mike Tomlin where we lost two or three games in a row, and just the way he gets the team to respond and bounce back is unbelievable. He believes in his system. He believes in his defense. And I thought they was going to lose the defense for a while early in the season. Like you said, he lost, the three Bs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it's just he found a way to make things right. And they didn't panic. He didn't panic back then when I was in the locker room with him in 2015. And it's not surprising. He's always a guy who finds a way to respond to adversity, and the way he got his team to respond, I think, is even more remarkable.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Chucky. I like what John Gruden's been doing out there. With the whole AB debacle at the beginning of the season, and you see where they're at right now. And looking at the remaining schedule that they have, we talked about yesterday on the show, they play one winning team for the rest of the season. I think it's most of the games are at home. Four out of the last six are at home. I think they are going to make the playoffs. They're going to get that wild card spot in the AFC. But he's got them playing. and they've been hitting on the draft picks. Josh Jacobs has got the most yards out of any running back in franchise history. That's Marcus Allen. That's Bo Jackson. Up to this point in the, throughout the season.
Napoleon Kaufman.
The tight end, Waller, am I forgetting his name? But anyway, he is out there playing really, really good football, too. He's got the most catches up to this point in franchise history. More than Tim Brown.
Renfro has been great.
He is coaching around his players after that whole thing that happened with AB. I love what Coach Tomlin's doing, too, as well. I love your arguments, but I'm going to go with Chucky on this one. He is doing really well.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong arguing either side of this. The reason why I'm going to go John Gruden is because John Gruden was, 2 months ago, virtually a laughingstock. Yeah. I was laughing at John Gruden. The Burfict situation, the AB situation. I thought he was going to be an abject failure. And he's turned 4-4. This shocks the hell out of me. Mike Tomlin came into the year with me saying, this dude's backed up against the wall. You're about to see his best coaching performance. And he hasn't, you know, he's been dealt more adversity losing Big Ben, but he's done exactly what I expected. Hell, I even last week was like, man, I wonder why they won't give up on the season. Because there's no quit in Mike Tomlin. They traded for Minka Fitzpatrick. It's worked out tremendously. But I just got to lean a little bit towards John Gruden is because I don't think I was the only person kind of laughing at this dude thinking the game had passed him by. And here he is backed up against the wall and is like, okay, I'm going to show you. You know, there's Chucky and there's the TV guy, but I'm also a hell of a football coach.
He is a hell of a football coach. Look, the AB situation, I think, is overblown in terms of impact for them because you can't lose what you never had. They never had AB on a team to say, oh, we lost that. They had it in their imagination of what it was going to be with AB, but that's different than having Ben Roethlisberger your entire career and then week two, what are we going to do? And now we're on our third string quarterback and we're still 4-4, won four of their last five games, including a loss in overtime to the best team in the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens. Like, who expected that out of this team where you're taking a number two receiver, making him a number one receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster, and no franchise quarterback, no franchise running back. I mean, Mike Tomlin is making it happen.
But I like what you guys said about John Gruden, because when I look back at what John Gruden did last year, I was kind of one of the guys who felt like he wouldn't return to his coaching form in the National Football League. Like 10 years removed from the game, like did the game pass you by? And to see them fight through the adversity they fought through this year, build a team, build a roster, and quiet as kept in that division, stay afloat. It's a lot of credit that he deserves in terms of what he's been able to do to get them guys to play hard for him.
I agree, and I think you talk about sitting in the booth. What I think he's been up there taking notes. He's been watching all these coaches come through, seeing their formula for success,
right,
a la the New England Patriots. And I said this before. I don't think they are going to max out another player. I think they learn with AB. You see what New England does. They're not maxing players out. They build through the draft. He has been noticing this. He is seeing what works, what offenses work, what defenses work. How do you put players in position? He does that quarterback school he's been doing.
Yeah.
This guy knows what he's doing. It's not like he took that 10 years off and was just being a personality up in the booth. He has been studying, and he is putting – it's implemented right now. You see the draft picks they're hitting on. They're coaching around those guys. This team is only going to get better, too, because they have so many picks coming up. This is – he has been a great – he's been phenomenal. I've loved watching his patience through this whole thing.
He's restored Derek Carr back to being a franchise quarterback.
Yes.
And again, I think what Tomlin's getting out of Mason Rudolph probably a little bit more impressive because Derek Carr is supposed to be a franchise quarterback. But this is the year, if you look around the league, of the backup quarterback. Everybody seems to be getting something out of their backup quarterback. And look, I think you can make the argument for either one of these guys. They both have Super Bowls. Titles. They both, to me, came into the season with something to prove. They're both proving. And I still say, with Mike Tomlin, I hope that he gets out of here with an 8-8, 9-7 record and bolts out of Pittsburgh. I still think his best play is to go do what Andy Reid has done in Kansas City. Go start, do 10, 15 years someplace else, because he has certainly proven his value. any team that has an opening this year, he would have to be at the top of your priority list.
What do they say? Comparison is a thief of joy, because when you compare something, you got to diss the other thing. Let me diss the Oakland Raiders right now. Give me their signature win. Indy? Okay, that may be it. They beat Denver, Detroit, Chicago. Now, let's see who they lost to.
You got to win them games, though.
Detroit win. Detroit's a better team.
Better team, right. But this is who they lost to. KC, Minnesota, Green Bay, Houston. Put them out there with a good to great team. They're not doing it. So,
That would be a problem for the Chiefs in their rematch. They were good. The Chiefs had one explosive quarter.
Like AB, imagination. Here we go again, huh? What could be?
I agree with you, though, but look at the schedule. Look at they're playing losing teams from here on out. That's what I'm saying. Right. They're going to the playoffs. I think they're going to lose to the Chiefs, too. But they still.
And they've lost two of their last three, so it's not like they're not on some big win streak either.
Tony Gonzalez and Michael Vick are back. Let's talk the MVP race. According to Fox Bet, Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson are now tied as the favorite to win the award at plus 300. Lamar led the Ravens to an upset win over the New England Patriots, but Wilson was even more impressive, throwing a career-high 5 touchdowns in a win over Tampa Bay. I think Russell Wilson's running away with the MVP award.
Mm.
22 TDs, 1 interception.
Mm.
It's incredible what he's doing. I don't even see Lamar as number two. I see Deshaun Watson as number two, but I think he's running away with it.
Well, let's start where you started, and I don't see Russell Wilson running away with it. I don't even see him having it right now. Give me a signature moment, signature game. You got stats.
5 TDs yesterday.
Yeah, 5 TDs against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is amazing. 22-1 for the entire season. Insane. But let's just talk about the energy. And I don't know if I should trust my timeline and that algorithm, but it's seducing me to say Lamar Jackson has the energy. He has the minds of people. He's electrifying. He has the energy around his campaign that Russell Wilson doesn't have. Now, let's say why. Pacific Northwest, we've heard it before in college rankings. We heard it before in Heisman voting. Seattle, Washington, and the even West Coast. The news gets to the East Coast late in terms of success out here on the West Coast. So maybe some of that is happening, but it just seems like in football circles, the expectations of Russell Wilson being great are so high, and he's exceeding them, but still not to the tune of the energy of the Dragon Slayer, which we saw last night in Lamar Jackson. To me, Lamar Jackson's our MVP.
I don't think Russell's running away with it right now. I would still say Deshaun Watson has been the most dynamic guy for his team and has done more. But Russell just continues to stack good performances. And it's week after week. It always looks the same. And he puts the team on his back and makes the guys around him so much better. That's what I can appreciate from his game and how he does it each and every week. Because, you know, when I watch this offense, and I've been watching him since the beginning of the year. And even last year, I've watched him evolve, but I never know what I'm going to get. It's not an identity within this offense. They come, they line up. You know, you see guys like Lockett making plays, and then, you know, you don't know who the running back is going to be sometimes. And then next thing you know, Russell's making all types of plays.
Yeah.
So he's definitely in the race. He's number two behind Deshaun to me, but I think he has to continue to produce each and every week, which is what he's been doing.
Mm-hmm. I love quarterbacks, no offense. But what about the running back from Carolina, Christian McCaffrey?
Love it.
What he's been doing. Tell me he's not carrying that team right now. Yeah. What are they, 5-2, whatever it is?
Oh, they're 5-4.
Are they 5-4? I just think as soon as you lose Cam, you bring in this first-year quarterback, and him coming in there doing what he's done with the run and the pass, carrying that offense. And with Coach Rivera, we talk about him, he might be another guy up for candidate coach of the year because what he's done under the diversity. I like Christian McCaffrey. I think right now, but I'm with you. I'm just making an argument for him. Of course, the quarterback has the ball in his hands every play. Out of the quarterbacks that you guys mentioned, I'm going to go with Russell Wilson, too. I think with what he's been able to do with losing a number one receiver, using Tyler Lockett out there, who stepped up big time and proved some people wrong, and that obviously helps when you got a good quarterback throwing you the ball. I think I'm going to give it to Russell.
Look, Carolina's 5-3. I think Christian McCaffrey belongs in the conversation. But you got to remember here, part of what's going to help Russell Wilson is just sentiment. Good guy. Mm. He's like the next Drew Brees. Mm. Drew Brees never won an MVP.
Yeah.
Are they really going to pass up an opportunity to give Russell Wilson a face of the league, his MVP? You got Tom Brady getting towards the end, no longer the superstar in terms of performance. Mm. Throw that MVP label on Russell Wilson. That works for the NFL. His performance justifies it. What are they, 7-2? Mm. And he's got, yeah. I think they got to play San Francisco twice more.
Yeah, it's coming up.
He
this
does
week.
Anything against San Francisco starting this week. And I think y'all going to see it. Like, it's Secretariat out there ahead of the entire field.
Man, history repeats itself. I've been here 1 year and, 2 months?
Yeah.
And already you saying the same thing you said last year.
About Russell Wilson?
Yep. Drew Brees was the, we're going to give him the Heritage Award. And, his stats don't have to add up. Even if they do, it's the Heritage Award. And how that work out with Drew Brees?
Stats add up?
Yeah, they do add up. And you know what? It's still not enough because there's not enough energy around this campaign. One, he faced Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens. How'd that turn out?
Yeah.
Oh, they lost.
Not good.
They lost 30-16. Ooh, got spanked. Yeah. So your MVP went against the other MVP. That one won. Two, let's talk about who the most electrifying guy in the NFL is, either Tyreek Hill or Lamar Jackson. Worth the price of admission, as Stephen A. would say. Box office. Those two guys. Love me some Russell Wilson. Not the same level in terms of what you're bringing out when you're seeing them on the field. Expectations are high. He goes with them. And then if you look at it, it's just Lamar Jackson because he's doing it multidimensional. He's on pace for 4,900 total yards. We've never seen that. Like, what Russell Wilson is going to accomplish this year, wherever Atlanta.
We've never seen 4,900 total yards from a quarterback.
From a quarterback, go.
Patrick Mahomes had 5,000.
I'm not talking about, what I should say is rushing lending itself. Leading rusher.
Not 4,900 rushing yards.
No, it's going to be 1,200. He's on pace for 1,200 rushing yards. You don't think that's amazing?
Like, it is amazing. But the energy you talking about is over social media. That does not vote.
I'm talking about when I got choices of games to watch. And I'm like,
I got it. That doesn't vote. Hardcore NFL writers.
Oh, the Drew Breeses.
The media.
Fans. How'd that go last year?
It didn't happen. Drew Brees kind of fell off. But I don't expect that happening with Russell Wilson.
He's going to beat this guy's record. Like Mike Vick right here, bro. Like Mike Vick plus?
Mike.
Come on, man.
When you set the record, did you win MVP?
No. Not even close.
He had no energy. He had the energy, too. There goes my energy argument, because I know I was going to watch me a Mike Vick game.
But to Russell's credit, man, when you look at what he's doing, like he's doing it without a – I can't say he doesn't have a run game because I haven't followed him closely. But they don't have a guy where he can just turn around and give it to him and he can go rush for 130 yards. Mm. And his day on the job will be easy. He has to, you know, expend more energy. He has to do a lot more. And that's the reason why I said Deshaun Watson as well. You take those two guys away from their team and what do you have? I think the MVP goes to a guy who is the most valuable player for that team. And right now it's those two guys. And Chris McCaffrey in the mix too.
I'm going to tell you the other thing about Russell Wilson is he's been playing in Seattle under the narrative, oh man, the Legion of Boom carried you. The Legion of Boom is gone. They just gave up 30-some-odd points to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell Wilson put on his little Superman cape and is carrying him. They've made this kid DK Metcalf. He looks like he's going to be all rookie.
It's coming along.
Lockett looks tremendous. They got the running back Carson. Russell Wilson is carrying this team.
And God, this is going to sound wrong. No one really is shocked or they don't care enough. Why is all the energy, all the conversations, all the headlines, Lamar Jackson? Just tell me why. Let's make my argument for me because I'm not trying to win this argument. It just seems like everyone's talking about Lamar Jackson.
No. Again, first of all, social media is controlled by Black Twitter.
I'm talking about when I watch network TV or when I talk with my boys. Russell Wilson, man.
No.
Like, no one's doing that.
No. Twitter is in control of the media. Most people sit on TV and in the media and try to say things that'll be popular over
Twitter. What about when I'm at Jalapeno Pizza and I'm on my fifth one? They ain't controlled by nothing but, like, dog. Did you see Lamar Jackson? No one's like,
tell you why.
Okay.
It's like Russell Wilson is Will Smith.
I love Will Smith. What you talking about, Willis?
Lamar Jackson is Tupac. That's the energy that Lamar is something so new and revolutionary.
Yeah. I told you.
And it's like, oh my God, he's changing the game. Mm. Now look, that's a great story. I don't know if it wins you the MVP.
Yeah, that's
like
what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, it's like you when you came into the league. Yeah, right?
Just everything was just so new. And like you said, it's revolutionary and it's something that we haven't seen, you know, in a long time from Lamar Jackson. Now we're seeing it now. Yes, it's MVP.
It's a new for Christmas. I mean, you got your toy you've been playing with for a long time.
Wait a minute. Yeah. It's a new toy. It's not that new. He played 7 games last year where Patrick Mahomes before he won MVP on the table.
We didn't know if it was going to happen
again
this year.
Y'all acting like we didn't know Lamar Jackson was coming this year unless you didn't believe.
Here's the thing. Hello. Here's the difference between Mike and Lamar and the era of football.
What, Lamar faster?
No, when Mike came into the league, they was like, okay, how can we fit Mike into this box?
Good point.
When Lamar comes in, it's like, how can we build a box that fits Lamar?
You ain't lying.
That's where.
Yep. And that box on it, that's why. If you read it, real small print, it says MVP on that box.
Michael Vick is back with us. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington. Let's move to Philadelphia, where the Eagles handed the Bears their 4th straight loss in a 22-14 game that was far more lopsided than the score. The Bears offense had just 9 yards in the first half, and Mitch Trubisky finished 10 for 21 for 125 yards and no touchdowns, which is about par for the course for the Bears quarterback, who is at or near the bottom of the league in several major passing categories, which has left a lot of people wondering why Matt Nagy refuses to send Trubisky to the bench. All right, I got 3 former NFL players here. Mm. Perhaps you all know. Why won't Matt Nagy bench Mitchell Trubisky?
Oh, man, 2 things. One is the ROI. They got to get a return on that investment. That is a number 2 overall pick. And they moved up from 3 to 2 to get him. Gave up 2/3 and a 4th rounder for that. So there's an investment there. You got to get it. You got to extract as much as you can out of it. And 2, it's like the politics at play in sports. When you're drafted high, I was a 2nd rounder. I'm not like these guys right here, number 1 overall, number 2 overall. Yeah. But even as a 2nd rounder, my roommate was undrafted, Pat Williams. And we sitting there every night, and I'm getting destroyed. I'm coming from Columbia. I'm learning the game on the fly. He went to A&M. He knew the game. And every day they were glowing about me. Oh, Marcellus, I can see it. Oh, it's coming right around the corner. Meanwhile, Pat doing better than me, and they would sit there, get to the back of the line, move on. No investment in him. He's undrafted. You're seeing that right now. They're going to try everything, even using some magic and sorcery to try and make sure that people see Matt Nagy and everyone who's invested in Mitchell Trubisky succeed. And that's all we're seeing at play.
I agree with you. And I think the worst thing for Mitch right now is to be benched. You know, he's in his 3rd year. You know, like you said, he's an investment. And for some quarterbacks, it takes time. But I'll say this. It's Matt Nagy's decision, and Matt Nagy is responsible for Mitch Trubisky. He's responsible for making sure that this guy can go out and play better than what he played yesterday. So what does that take? I mean, dumb down the offense? Maybe that's what it is. You got too much into the offense? Mm-hmm. Take something out. But do the things that Mitch is comfortable with so he don't go out and have just a disappointing showing like he did yesterday. Mm. I don't want to see him bench because I think that's the worst thing that you can do for a guy that's in a funk. He's playing with no confidence. How do you get him confidence? You give him things that he like. Make him feel good about the game plan and what he's doing. I've seen that happen too many times before. Nagy comes from under that tree. Make Trubisky at least an above average player within his next 8-game stretch. That's the best thing that you do. Then give it a full season, and then you can look back and evaluate and say, we can't move forward with this guy. But I don't think you get anything in putting Chase Daniels in there. Mm-mm. I mean, it's the same type of
I was about to touch on that. So my first point is a piggyback off of what you guys are saying. GM Ryan Pace and former head coach John Fox bring in Trubisky. Probably looked at him as the savior of John Fox's job, probably the reemergence and resurgence of the Chicago Bears. Now, in comes Nagy. It's promises, Whit. They made promises. It's not just an ROI. Nagy can't take him out because he made promises. And I'm going to tell you how you know it's promises. Because just like you said, to the second point, Chase Daniels, 11-year journeyman, never really transitioned into being a starter or a real franchise type of guy, a guy that could take your team to the next level. That's your backup. So if Mitch Trubisky goes down with an injury, if Mitch Trubisky goes down and, or gets benched or whatever it may be, you're not, you're cashing the check for this season and it's done. Whatever you got right now, you're taking that away because you're showing right now. Chase Daniels as your backup. That's a high draft pick you had to bring in. You got to try to see what's going to happen with Trubisky.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit about Chase Daniel. He is considered one of the upper-tier backup quarterbacks in the NFL. Yep. He's supposed to be a cut below Teddy Bridgewater in terms of backup quarterbacks. Mm. The reason to bench Trubisky, I think, eventually is going to be you're going to lose your locker room, man. The guys in that locker room, Khalil Mack and everybody else, they're not – worried about the promises you made. And trust me, I'm sure Matt Nagy told, in order to get the head coaching job, went in there and told, what I'm going to do with Mitch Trubisky, that's going to be unbelievable.
It's on.
And he can't walk those promises back, and that's how they hook you in. So Ryan Pace has Matt Nagy riding in the same boat as him.
Yeah.
It's as if Matt Nagy drafted him.
Yeah.
Well, you told me you believed in him. You told me this and that was going to happen, and the offense you were going to run was going to be Mitch-friendly. And so he can't walk out of that. But more than anything, I think it's Ryan Pace and it's a decision upstairs. They won't allow Matt Nagy to bench him. But eventually it's going to cost everybody credibility within that locker room. It's going to be hard to coach those guys. This guy is stopping them from winning games. That offense is letting a very talented defense down.
Yeah, it comes at you fast. Life happens fast. Let's just be real about Mitch Trubisky. Also, last year, he won 11 games.
Yeah, there you go.
Last year, he had a top 10 offense, ninth in points. Last year, he had a number one defense. They were like, we were close. Remember the kick, the field goal, boom, boom, the double boink. Without that, they advanced in the playoffs. So he has equity to some degree. He has runway to, let's see which one is real. Mm-hmm. Last year's Mitch or this year's Mitch?
Or this year's.
Yeah, so and then Chase Daniels, to your point, he's 2-3 as a starter.
I was about to say.
I mean, let's not act like we got evidence.
Top-tier backup.
When we've seen him out there.
You're the backup quarterback.
Yeah,
but he was a starter. Teddy Bridgewater was a starter.
Right, and a winning starter. Right. So, John Gruden, what we say, a month ago, laughing at him. Now, all of a sudden, hey, John Gruden. Same thing with Mitch Trubisky. Just a year ago, a few games ago, Mitch Trubisky was the toast of the town. How things change so fast.
Yeah, I feel bad for Matt Nagy because I hate that he's in this position where he got to make a decision on a guy that he just inherited, you know, as a coach. And look, when you're a talented, you know, offensive mind, you feel like you can take any guy and make him better. That just might not be the case. Just keep in mind that Mitch Trubisky only had 1 year of college experience, so he's still growing, but in the NFL, you ain't got that type of time.
Joined by NFL experts Eric Mangini and LeVar Arrington. All right, let's move to the Cleveland Browns.
Genius.
Who lost their fourth game in a row and fell to 2-6 yesterday at Denver. It will now take a miracle for the Browns to qualify for the playoffs. No 2-6 team has made the playoffs since the 1970 Bengals, so there's little left to do in Cleveland beyond pointing fingers of blame. Cleveland general manager John Dorsey, head coach Freddie Kitchens, and franchise quarterback Baker Mayfield all deserve criticism. Kitchens, in my opinion, should be fired. Mm. But I think what's happening in Cleveland is bigger than just Cleveland. There's a lesson in Cleveland that everyone in football needs to learn. Diva wide receivers are an absolute waste of money, time, and energy. You can't build a winning culture with them. In addition to firing Kitchens, the Browns should admit they made a mistake acquiring Odell Beckham Jr. OBJ is AB 2.0. AB, of course, is former Steelers, Raiders, and Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown. The Browns flew to Denver riding a three-game losing streak. It was a classic circle-the-wagon game for the Cleveland. Odell literally took the field wearing clown shoes. I'm not exaggerating. With their season on the line, Odell and his best friend Jarvis Landry spent part of their preparation coordinating what kind of special cleats they could wear to draw attention to themselves. OBJ wore cleats decorated with the face of the Joker. Landry wore gold and orange cleats. The NFL told Beckham and Landry they would not be allowed to play in the second half if they didn't change cleats at halftime. OBJ is an attention-seeking, immature child. After the game, Beckham and Landry claim Nike cleared the cleats with the NFL over the summer. OBJ is an individual brand who is far more concerned with enhancing his brand as a celebrity endorser than winning football games. He's paid by Nike to act as an agent of chaos within football. He's more focused on pleasing Nike than the Browns, Giants, or any team in the NFL. Beckham is the high-class version of Antonio Brown. The Oakland Raiders were smart for ditching Brown. So were the Steelers and the Patriots. Wherever Brown goes, dysfunction follows. The same is true for Beckham. He encourages an unprofessional work culture. Is there a more toxic culture than the 2019 Browns? Beckham's has spent the entire season nailed to a cross, claiming he is a victim of the oppressive and bigoted NFL. I'm not shocked that a Browns defensive back melted down yesterday via Twitter, spewing racism and threatening violence. Is Odell Beckham responsible for Jermaine Whitehead's bigotry and ignorance? No. But Odell contributed to the culture that fomented Whitehead's meltdown. It's what agents of chaos do. They stir the pot of anger, victimhood, and dysfunction. The Browns cut Whitehead this morning. He's just a symptom. The real joker is Odell. The Giants figured it out and shipped him out of Gotham. Diva wide receivers aren't worth the trouble. All right, guys. Marcel, let's get us rolling. Mm. Is OBJ to blame for the Browns' disappointing season?
Not at all. I wouldn't start with him. One, he plays a dependent position that really needs great quarterback play for him to be who he is, or at least adequate quarterback play. And let's be real, Baker Mayfield has regressed. But you said it. The issue is, to me, Freddie Kitchens. Just simple as that. Promoted to the offensive coordinator, play caller last year after being the running back coach basically a year ago, and now you're the head coach and still calling the plays. He has had low light moments calling those same plays. And whoever created this culture, he has to be the one who wants to correct it if it's not going in the right direction. So this culture, to me, was already out of control before Odell Beckham Jr. arrived on the scene. And we just didn't have any games to map it on, so therefore we thought everything was fine because they caught fire at the latter part of the year. But this is Jim Tomsula, if you guys remember, from the 49ers, in which I talked to a few players who were there, and they knew their careers before Jim Tomsula and during Jim Tomsula. And things got worse, more adverse, and difficult for those same players. If you're not put in the proper place by the chess master, things are tough tasks. OBJ playing dependent position of receiver because of a regressing quarterback and a coach who is out of his element in terms of being a head coach.
Okay, I have a lot of things here to respond to. First of all, the idea that the Giants were so smart for moving on from Odell, they paid him a ton of money and signed an extension before they did that, so that was really poor business. With AB, the Patriots signed him, the Raiders signed him, the Steelers signed him. He's got dead money on all three caps. So they obviously saw value in what Antonio Brown brought to the table. With the Jim Tomsula equation, I was there with Jim Tomsula, and Jim was asked to do a lot of things organizationally, which came from the top, that he then put into place. Was it all popular? No, it wasn't popular. But the people who came after him, they were worse. And he tried to push things forward that was asked for from above. So, I think we need to put that narrative into a context. And then with the situation in Cleveland, to me, this has the GM's hands on it too. He decided to go with Freddie Kitchens because he wanted a guy that was young that he could essentially control. And he could take control of the organization and bring in the people that he wanted to. And now that person is tasked with putting it all together. He's in the first year as a head coach. He's going to need time. Has it been perfect? No. But the big part of this is them building up all the expectations unreasonably at the beginning part of the season. And we could look at Odell, he's one issue. But Baker Mayfield fighting with media personalities over Twitter and the back, even last week there was some of that as well. It's a group effort that's taking place there. And there's a lot of people that need to take accountability. And there's a lot of people that need to look and say, okay, what can I do differently in order to get this right?
Before we get to you, LeVar, and a lot of what you said, there's a lot of truth in it. Only one person showed up to work yesterday riding a 3-game losing streak in clown shoes.
I understand that. But whether it's the shoes, and no one is saying that Odell hasn't looked for attention. He's usually performed at a very high level. to me, the clown shoes are one aspect of that. And other people have had cleats that are questionable and things that are questionable. I can't say that it's strictly him. To me, that's a group effort in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm going to jump right on that. And we remember Dennis Rodman's hair when he played for the Chicago Bulls. And we remember all of the personalities that were on that Chicago Bulls team. You have to have the proper pieces in place to properly manage and push and get results with all of those personalities. So when I look at what's going on in Cleveland right now, I look at it from the standpoint of if you bring in War Emblem, if you bring in Big Brown or Secretariat, and you're bringing in all these thoroughbred talents, you've got to have somebody who's going to train them the right way. You got to have somebody who's going to get them to run the right way. Otherwise, you risk having an unsettled thoroughbred. That thoroughbred can't perform the way that it needs to perform unless it has the proper diet, the proper environment, the proper trainer, the proper jockey. And that's what's taking place in Cleveland right now. You're seeing a roster of tremendous talent that is coming up far short. And the only reason why those clown shoes matter, the only reason why his attitude matters is because the guy that is controlling and running that personnel has not been able to figure out how to best guide and push to make sure that they can run that race the way that they need to. When you're winning, the clown shoes are fun. It's enjoyable. Look at his clown shoes. Oh, the Joker movie just came out. But they're losing, so now it becomes a major issue, and it's a concern, and it's a focal point for everybody that's on looking and saying, this is what's the detriment of this team, when I think it's much bigger. It's far bigger than that.
There's a lot of talented guys that don't want to be coached. And talented, you need to have the combination of being wanting to be coached, and then the coach needs to have the ability to do the coaching. And I don't know what the dynamic is between the head coach and the GM, but if he doesn't have the juice to put things in place that he wants to put in place, then it's hard. You're just at the mercy of a third party, and you're trying to run a race without being able to really control the horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my thing with Odell, I don't single him out. One, because he's always performed well despite his attitude, his cry for attention. He's always been a great receiver. This year, he's not a great receiver, but he's still on pace for 78 catches and 1,150 yards.
Maybe he's a great receiver that's not having great production.
He's not having great production because we know the quarterback and the coach issues. Odell has had 5 head coaches in his 6 years. Odell has been on losing teams every year but one. 6 wins, 11 once. 3 wins and 5 wins. Odell has, give Odell Eli, who is either going to win the Super Bowl or nothing, and then now you take him to Cleveland and they hyped it up. Bad selection right here.
Either you're part of the problem or you're part of the solution.
He's
part of the problem. You can't. I'm just sorry, man. I would have fell out, man. We riding a 3-game losing streak. Our season's on the line, and this dude has spent the week worrying about what Joker shoes.
But,
are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. This is a child, and I'm trying to lead men. And it's some. And again, blame Freddie Kitchens, blame John Dorsey, whomever. But the end of the second half of last year went pretty well without OBJ. And a guy that brings that kind of individual, hey, look at me, I'm here, I'm a brand. Every week there's a different play he's making for headlines and brand improvement. It's not about football with the guy.
There are a lot of receivers that have been that type of
person.
Randy Moss was a brand guy. T.O. was a brand guy.
T.O. never won a Super Bowl.
Keyshawn Johnson was
Keyshawn
a brand
won
guy.
A Super Bowl.
Some of these
Not
guys,
really.
Some of these guys have
Not
been
really.
Some of these guys have been brand guys. And that position in particular.
Go
is
look
one of those
across
positions.
The NFL and show me where that's winning. I'm looking at the Raiders, no AB things. I'm looking at Pittsburgh. That culture seems to be improved. Mm. They're surviving a
I'm
lot
looking at
of
Atlanta
garbage.
With Julio Jones, perfect personality, no winning. Well, like it doesn't matter how you play. Larry Fitzgerald, how that looking? I mean, he's
winning.
Old, but still, no matter who you're talking about, you could be nice.
I'd rather have L. Fitzgerald and Julio and all them other guys. You just
I think you'd rather have Julio.
But if you look at the Rams the last 2 years, that's a team that's been filled with personalities.
Who?
The Rams. And one of the things that we thought with a young head coach is, how is he going to be able to manage those personalities? And he's done a really good job with that.
Yeah. Oh, got rid of Peters and Talib?
He did at this year.
Contract years.
But they also brought him in, and they had a lot of other personalities on that team as well. So it can work. Can it work long term? You know, it's not something that I believe in. The most telling thing to me about the Browns game yesterday was on the final drive that the Broncos had with 3 minutes and 30 seconds left. They've still got a chance if the Browns stop them to win the game, and they flash to the sideline and Baker Mayfield's sitting by himself. Odell Beckham's way over to the left. He's by himself. There's no coaches over there saying, if we get the ball back, this is what we're going to do. To me, that was the most disturbing thing about that whole game. You've got a chance to win the game, and nobody's talking about what we're going to do to go win the game.
I'm sure Odell was talking about his cleats for next week. LeVar Arrington and Eric Mangini are back. Let's move to New York, where the Cowboys face off with the Giants tonight. Just as things are starting to get interesting in the AFC East, a few weeks ago, it looked like the Dallas was taking control of the division after blowing out the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. But now, Philly has won two straight and appear to be moving past recent reports of locker room tension. Question here is, are the Eagles better than the Cowboys?
No. They just played.
And they just beat them.
And they just beat the brakes off them. 37-10. How you like that? Talking to the cheerleaders in the third quarter.
Did you just not say the Patriots are better than the Ravens?
No, I didn't say that. I said at the end of the year, I'm forecasting that. I'm talking about what's happening. The weather right now is the Cowboys are better than the Eagles. I don't have much to say about this, except they just beat them. And the Eagles, why would you have enough ammunition by, what, the fact that you beat other teams that are good teams? I don't even understand the conversation.
If the Cowboys lose tonight, the Eagles are in first place.
I hear that. But when we head-to-head matchup,
the Cowboys
in tiebreakers.
The Cowboys lost to the Jets last time I saw them. Mm. They can lose to the Giants.
Mm.
And that would put the Eagles in first place. Therefore, the Eagles could argue, we're better than the Cowboys.
I think when you look at the course of the season, the Cowboys started strong against teams that weren't very good.
Yeah.
And then they lose to New Orleans without Drew Brees. Then they really come out flat against Green Bay, and the score looks a little closer than the game actually was. And then they lose the next week to the Jets, and you're sitting there trying to figure out what's the identity of this team, or what's the character of the team more so than the identity. And when you look at the Eagles' season, they've had to struggle through a lot of difficult injuries. The Eagles have lost 48 games to key players, where the Cowboys have lost 13 games to key players in terms of missed playing time. The Eagles have had to recalibrate and try to figure out where they fit and how they're going to operate, and they've done a pretty good job with that. So I give them the edge in terms of resilience and their ability to continue to improve through this adversity, where Dallas really hasn't faced much adversity, and in every category, they look better than the Eagles, but yet you just don't know where they are.
Let me clear this up, because I don't think the timeline is being properly stated. The last time we saw the Cowboys play, they played the Eagles, not the Jets. They lost to the Jets the week before they played the Eagles. Then they rebounded and smoked the Eagles and said, let's go on vacation.
That's correct.
It's called a bye week.
That is
and
correct.
Now we play tonight. Where's this Jets talk coming in? They already
my mistake.
Okay, they corrected that.
I think it was a little bit of an indictment on what we may have thought that this Dallas Cowboy team was going into that Jets game. I mean, they looked pedestrian playing against those Jets.
Mm-hmm.
But when I use resilience, I use resilience in the sense that the Cowboys bounce back and put their foot to tail with the Philadelphia Eagles. But now you watch the Eagles and how they played yesterday. You saw Carson Wentz find a rhythm. They played much better. They're getting their running game going. I'm partial to Miles Sanders, very fine running back. They're finding a rhythm as a team, and maybe it's some of this, the drama that has taken place that they're moving beyond now. But if I'm still looking at just personnel-wise and potential, where you're going to hit once you get to that point where we're at in the season now, where who are the best teams? Who's going to identify themselves? I think tonight is a very big tail of the tape for the Philadelphia Eagles, because not because the New York Giants not because the Giants are a really good team this year, but because it is a divisional rivalry and these guys are going to play each other well. So I still think personnel-wise, the Cowboys are the better team in this case. They would probably be the best representative moving forward. Out of the NFC East.
When you look at bounce back, you would have said New Orleans game, bounce back Green Bay, and they got smoked by Green Bay. And then you said, okay, bounce back from Green Bay, New York Jets, and then they got beat by the Jets. So their bounce back from the first loss took 3 weeks, and they did beat the Eagles. But the Eagles have had to come through a lot more stuff than Dallas has to this point. And Dallas has had a fairly easy run in terms of challenges, locker room, injuries, things like that, and both these teams are in the same spot.
Dallas was injury depleted in those games, though, with their most
Lost 13 games to key players as composed to, I think, 38. 48 for the Eagles. Look, for me, it comes down to Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. Who would I rather have the last 7-8 games of the season? Carson Wentz.
Today, I'm going with Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Today?
Tomorrow could be different.
Carson Wentz. Look, Dallas won't commit to Dak Prescott. I still think that's an issue hanging over this football team. And, you know, like him or not, maybe he's injury prone. Alshon Jeffrey doesn't like him half the time. I don't know. The Eagles have made a commitment. The guy's got a boatload of talent, Carson Wentz. I can see – I'll be very interested watching the Cowboys tonight. This is a game they should handle the Giants. But I'm not sure they're going to. I think this is going to be a close game. And I just don't feel as good about the Cowboys. When they got to the trade deadline and made this desperate public attempt to sign Jamal Adams or to acquire to trade for Jamal Adams, that said a lot to me about what they thought about their team right now. They don't feel like they got it. And
they don't feel like they got it?
No.
Last year they were 3-5, and now I understand when you didn't feel like you got it, but they end up 10-6, and they made the playoffs, and Dak played better than Zeke. Dak gave them chances to win that game against the Rams. This year they're 4-3, better record than last year. They could finish off, hypothetically, better than they did last year. I'm feeling them.
All right, Darnell, I know the Eagles were one of these Super 6 games. Did anyone win this weekend?
Well, you know, Terry Bradshaw going to be broke in no time here. It sounds like 24 fans got perfect 6 out of 6 scores in a Thursday night football contest last week and split the jackpot. And then yesterday, one lucky fan won the London contest and took home 10 G's. So make sure you download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for a chance to win.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us with our approval rating on me. Also,
you know,
Uncle Jimmy lost a bet to me and owes me 3 push-ups.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Get down, anyway, old man. Geriatrics.
Really?
Give us the big dummy of the day first.
Let's go ahead and get this one out.
Yeah.
Big dummy of the day go to somebody who sat up here and compared LeVar Jackson to Tupac. Yo, man, LeVar ain't even Coolio, man. How the hell you gonna make him Tupac?
Oh, Lamar. Man. It's Lamar.
Lamar.
He ain't, I tell you what, it ain't no Tupac.
All right.
I might have said that part wrong.
Let's talk Sunday night football. Everyone mocked me last
week
for picking Lamar Jackson and the Ravens to run all over the undefeated Patriots. But they came through winning 37-20. Marcellus.
What's up?
After my big win, are you finally ready to admit I'm a genius?
Dang. Hell no, I admit you a genius.
Good call, bro.
I've never seen a batter go to the box and have 9 balls and 12 strikes. That's how you just, you swing at everything. And finally you connect and everybody like, oh my God, he connected. What a home run. You get a lot of pitches thrown at you. You swing and miss on most of them. But respect, you got this one right. And hater, you hammered it home.
Hater in the house.
Yeah,
Uncle
right here,
Jimmy.
Right here, hater.
Don't be a hater. Are you ready to admit that your nephew's a
9 balls.
Look, man, you picked the winner, all right? You did that.
Yeah.
Whoop-diddy-damn-do. Okay? Look, man, even a broke clock can be on CP time at least twice a day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so what? Look, man, let me tell you what. I can tell you what. You ain't no genius.
Yeah.
You know, you are, nephew, you are what they call a degenerational gambler.
A degenerate.
Yeah.
No, you know what the hell I said.
What
you said.
If you would have just stuck with one bet, you'd be looking good right now.
Mm.
But you also picked the Browns, the Colts, and the Lions.
Oh, bum.
The point I'm trying to make to your nephew is the rate you going, you're going to leave me and your mama broke. Because you wasting our inheritance. You wasting our inheritance on cheap thrills and even cheaper women. See, now me and your mama done talk. Now, your mama think you done got this gambling problem from your daddy's side of the family.
That may be true.
Now, look, now I'm going to tell you something. I knew your daddy. I knew your Uncle Johnny. I knew your cousin Two-Toe that worked at the gas station.
Two-Toe?
Corner.
What happened to him?
I knew the boy's whole family.
Yeah. Two-Toe.
And I'm here to tell you, all of them died broke. Now, if I'm lying, hold on. How many funerals you done had to pay for?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Look, now, I ain't trying to be hard on you. I know ever since your mom and daddy got a divorce, it's been hard on you.
Yeah.
You, because all you ever heard your daddy say was, the boy eating us out of house and home. That is not why your mama left. Your mama left because your daddy had a problem pulling out of card games late at night.
There's some truth.
Look at me, and I done let you tell this lie long enough.
Yeah.
How much your daddy got fired from Chrysler from reading the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Oh, what's the real?
Your daddy was reading the autobiography of Pete Rose. Your daddy was running numbers up and down the assembly line at Chrysler. And when I go to ask him about it, you know what he say.
What?
Oh, man, you know how them white folks do us. Thus far, it's looking to me like the only good return you done got on your investment is your little three funky-ass push-ups for me.
Yes. And can we get them three?
Now, let me tell you something. Yes. My gout flaring up, okay? My gout messing up. My sugar messing up.
Give me the push-up.
My sacroiliac nerve is messing
up. Give me the push-up.
And you know my whole tater cup is hurt. But you know what, man? Let me tell you something, man. You know, you ain't said nothing but a thing to me.
Oh, he said more than that.
You ain't said, boy, look at count them, boy. 1, 2, 3, 4,
can you
5.
Flex
come on
your
with
arm.
It. What you want?
I think the floor
come
is
on.
Pregnant. You, the pregnant. That
he's
floor
very
is pregnant.
He is very fertile.
All right, let me move your arms next time.
All right, let me give you my approval rating for. Oh, no, I'm not. Y'all giving my approval
rating.
I'm not
about to say I'm going to do it. Uncle Jimmy, come on. Explain your 120 GOAT status contract payments. What is
I
this?
I ain't got that contract yet, bro.
You ain't got the contract yet?
That's still my family, man. Whenever you get done, man, we fam, you know?
Oh, man. He going to die
That's
broke.
That's my sister baby boy right there.
You going to die broke, too, giving him these
whole
fake
broken lonely.
Status. He's 77. I'm being accurate with
because
him.
Because somebody say something about how good I look.
You and the internet agree, Marcel.
Oh, look at you.
By one percentage point, All-Star got ahead of
GOAT
status.
I know
I should be GOAT status.
My dog, you nailed that.